It's the Dry Heat Check with Jay Cohen Espo. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. It is episode 13. I know everyone's going to say, you got to name it after Steve Nash. And if you're naming it after Steve Nash, then you clearly are not aware of what we do at the Dry Heat Check.
That is not how this show works, people.
We name it after Luke Longley, who wore the number 13 before Steve Nash got to Phoenix.
The blunder from down under, if you remember. The answer to Shaquille O'Neal, the one in a long line of the great white hopes in terms of Sun centers in the 90s, and we all remember it didn't really pan out.
We should do like an all-white Sun center team.
Oh, Joe Klein's leading it.
Danny Shays.
Oh, God.
We've already
Danny
named an episode
Shays
after Pat Burke. who else? Jake Sokolidis.
Oh, there were so many in the 90s. It just
one after another.
Yep, it was pretty bad.
So, Suns who wore number 13 in addition to Steve Nash and Luke Longley, it was Gus Johnson. And not
the play-by-play guy.
Not the different Gus Johnson. And someone that didn't wear the number 13 was Marcin Gortat.
But wanted to, and that's who this should have been the not Marcin Gortat episode of the Dry Heat Check. I told the story before, but he always wanted to wear number 13 here, kept asking, was told no.
And people in Phoenix said absolutely not after Steve Nash left. Some Cardinals, Chris Jackie, kicker, I think he was for a while.
He was a kicker.
And then,
not a quarterback like Tom Tupa, a kicker.
And anytime you can say the name Tom Tupa in an episode, I know you try to do it. So good for you for getting it out early.
I think I've almost done it in all 13 episodes.
You've done it quite a bit. I know you did with Kent Summers
last
week. Kurt Warner, obviously, the gloved one, wore the number 13. And Jerron Brown, who had a nice game, nice touchdown against the Bucks last week, he wore the number 13. Diamondbacks, a lot of random guys, and a couple guys that they jumped ship on too early. Medre Cummings, Alberto Chiaspo.
Yep.
And those two guys are examples of guys that they really liked in their farm system and either didn't pan out or got rid of too early. Tony Clark for one season wore the number 13.
Very, very good season for them when he wore 13.
Rodrigo Lopez,
yep,
who had a little bit of success as like a middle-of-the-road starting pitcher. Jason Kubel, who came in and played very well for the Diamondbacks a few years back. And then currently Nick Ahmed wears the number 13. And for the Coyotes, Daniel Carcillo. And Ray Whitney, I actually was advocating to name it after him. I know some people who aren't maybe big Coyotes fans would be like, who is Ray Whitney? Ray Whitney was a key piece on the Coyotes team that went to the Western Finals. But the best part about him was he used to drive Todd Walsh nuts on the Fox Sports Arizona broadcast. And I worked for Fox Sports Arizona. I spent a lot of time in the TV truck. And Ray Whitney, when Todd would do his, you know, pre-game stand-ups right on the bench by the ice, you'd see Ray Whitney behind him making faces, trying to distract him, coming up, poking him with the hockey stick, and he used to just mess with Todd Walsh all the time, and Todd was always a great sport about it, but I always have these visions of Ray Whitney making fun faces and driving one of us reporters nuts.
Any guy that can give Todd Walsh a hard time is a guy I enjoy. No, I love
Todd's
Todd. I'm kidding. Todd's a great guy. You didn't mention Cedric Bonner, one of the more
Rattlers.
Successful,
you know what? You are right.
13.
That is my bad. We normally we forget to mention the Rattlers,
well,
which is
there's only a handful of guys that would be that memorable, and Cedric Bonner is one of those guys. Look, the fear of number 13 is triskaidekaphobia. I bet you didn't know that.
You said that very nicely.
I'm educating you here. I don't think we need to have the fear of number 13 in town. Sure, Luke Longley, who this episode's named after, was, as I mentioned before, the blunder from down under. But look at it. Steve Nash, Kurt Warner, Cedric Bonner. Three of the more decorated athletes in Arizona sports history wore number 13. I actually think it's a good number when it comes to Arizona sports.
I couldn't agree more. So we've got a lot coming up here on the show. The Cardinals make a nice statement last week. We'll get into that in a second. Vegas set the over-under on wins for the Suns.
Vegas, baby, Vegas.
Vin Scully, classic once again. He's in his final days, which is unfortunate. We'll do something around Vin. And then the airing of grievances. Espo always has about 17 that he wants to rattle off. We limit him to one. And you know what? I'm going to limit you to just one this time because I've got one for a change.
That's all right. I have something epic planned. But let's make it clear. we're not towards the end of all of Vin Scully's days, just his days as a broadcaster.
Thank you for clarifying.
The Dodgers.
His days of broadcasting. Thank you for clarifying.
You're
I'm
welcome.
Not trying to seal off the days of Vin Scully in that regard. Let's talk about the Cardinals off the top. Nice response. 40 points on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a Buccaneers team that is still not a playoff team, but a lot of young talent, especially underrated talent on the defense, and what David Johnson did to the Quan in that game. Quan Alexander is a very talented upcoming. Him and David are great linebackers for the Bucs, and man, did David Johnson stick it to him. It was pretty fun. In fact, Quan took it out on Chris Johnson on that touchdown. Did you see that hit that he put on Johnson?
Broke his helmet.
It's like he took all that frustration out from David Johnson on Chris Johnson on that one play. Just kind of your overall reactions to get started. It was a kind of a shaky first quarter, but then they got it rolling, and then a great second quarter kind of paved the way for the win.
Thank God we can put away the Depends. The bedwetting is over. These are the Arizona Cardinals that we expected to see. We talked about it. Week one was an eye-opener for this team. I know Kent Summers kind of disagreed with me on that, but I feel like it was a big eye-opener for them realizing, okay, we can't just flip a switch. We have to come out here and we have to bust our backsides to get these wins, and let's do it, and let's do it in a big way. They came out and proved it on both sides of the ball. Against Tampa Bay, the defense was stellar. The secondary stepped up where in week one that wasn't the case. They made Jameis Winston, who the previous week had four touchdowns, and people are starting to talk about him as, you know, his teammates at least, as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. They made him look pretty pedestrian in that game. The offense was the offense we saw last year, which was refreshing because I wasn't questioning whether Carson Palmer was going to be able to have a good season. I was starting to question how good of a season it was going to be.
Right? So,
DeLome effect, that's
what you were saying?
Yeah, there was some concern that big NFC Championship game, maybe it left a little bit of a mark on him. But he came out, he played his game. They just came out and played Cardinals football. Now, the key is, you got to come out and have a repeat performance against the Buffalo Bills because the Buffalo Bills are nothing special. I actually think they're probably a worse team than they saw in Tampa Bay last week, but it's your first test on the road. And you got to come out and you got to play well. You got to say week two was not a fluke. This is the team we are, and we're going to come out and play like that. They need to put points on the board on a Rex Ryan defense.
Now, it was always said that traveling to the East Coast, playing at 10 a.m., never a good situation for the Cardinals. Now, they've kind of gotten rid of that trend the last couple of years with some, like, early in the season last year against the Chicago mm-hmm. Bears. They blew them out. There was a couple other instances where they played these morning games. This is a Bills team that is in such chaos that it kind of worries me. And I know we always play the worry wart, and we're always talking about don't want to get ahead of ourselves and not expressing extreme confidence. But this seems like a desperate Bills team that has just been everything that could go wrong has gone wrong for this team. They've already fired their offensive coordinator. They've got an unbelievably tough stretch coming up with first the Cardinals, then the Patriots. It's in Buffalo, which is never the easiest place to play, even though the Bills haven't had a ton of success the last few years. I'm a little worried because of some of the factors that go into traveling across the country and playing a team that is playing like they are absolutely desperate 3 weeks into the season. But I think with what we saw to the Cardinals last week, it's a little bit more reassuring that they could handle a storm like that.
I think that East Coast stuff was BS that they used to tell us when the Cardinals weren't very good to have a built-in excuse why they didn't look great. This is a professional team, a bunch of high-caliber players on this roster. If a time change and having to play a little earlier than they're used to is going to affect them, well, then Super Bowl hopes aren't going to be what you need to worry about.
Sure thing.
You need to worry about making the playoffs. This team just needs to come out and play their game to beat the Bills. It's better than playing the Bills in November or December where the weather becomes a factor. Now, I think that is a legitimate thing for a team that plays in a controlled environment like the Cardinals, going out and playing in inclement weather.
It's going to be pretty nice in New
York,
right?
It won't be bad. We're not talking snowstorms and freezing cold temperatures that you'd see in November or December. That's the kind of thing that I think a team like the Cardinals traveling to the East Coast, that's a legitimate excuse. An early start time and playing on the East Coast isn't a legitimate excuse to me. You're paid big dollars. You're supposed to be a top team in the NFL. You know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to go on the road and win games in uncomfortable situations. And this team, as long as they play their game plan, I feel pretty good about. They seem to have their heads screwed on straight.
Steve Keim deserves another award already this season, just 2 weeks in. First, the NFC Player of the Week on defense is Marcus Cooper. Trade that happened on September 2nd from the Kansas City Chiefs for a late draft pick. Comes in, two interceptions, one of them for six. And not just that, his tackling ability in the secondary was something that really stood out to me. There's that. There's also how, and I'll let you talk about Cooper in a second.
Yeah, no problem.
There is also how he handled the Tony Jefferson contract situation in the offseason. Because I was a big Tony Jefferson fan last season, but is he the type of guy you throw big money at? I'm not really sure. At the time last offseason, I kind of figured you'd throw more money at Rashad Johnson than you would Tony Jefferson. They let Tony Jefferson gauge the market as a restricted free agent. When nothing came back, he honored the qualifying offer, however that works. I'm not into the schematics of all that. Either way, he's back, and he might be, honestly, Espo, next to Patrick Peterson so far, the best player on this defense from what we've seen after 2 weeks. So two situations where Steve Keim on defense and in the secondary, an area that we expressed a little bit of concern with the depth and the health, is looking pretty remarkable right now.
Yeah, I think the Jefferson move was brilliant because you keep him hungry. You don't overpay him because you're afraid he might go somewhere. You trust that you understand what the market is and that he's not going to get a better offer than what you had in the qualifying offer, and you keep him coming back on that qualifying offer, and it forces him to play even more hungry than he had in the past because he's proving himself. That's huge when it comes to motivation for guys. And then Cooper, I got to be honest, you know, my day job isn't in sports anymore. I know stuff, but sometimes little trades fall through the crack. And when he got that first interception on Sunday, I was like, wait, who is this guy? Why do I not recognize this name? I had to Google it and go, oh, yeah, he's the guy that they got from the Chiefs in that deal. Oh, okay. That's the kind of stuff Steve Keim does. He gets these guys that aren't household names, are guys you almost forget wind up on the roster.
Tony Jefferson was an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, and all of a sudden they have major impacts. And I think Cooper can continue to have that kind of impact with, you mentioned, his tackling was stellar in that. It wasn't just the interceptions, and he seems to have a nose for the ball. He knows where to be, and that's huge. That's instinctual. You're not going to teach that. So that's a guy that hopefully, you know, playing in a secondary around guys like Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu, he's not expected to be the star, but can go in there and have impactful games, have impactful moments. It's huge for this defense.
Now, that's the Arizona Cardinals. They're looking to go 2-1. They travel to Buffalo this week. Let's switch gears now and talk Suns. And a week from now, the Suns will have started training camp, which is exciting because I love basketball season. I know you love basketball season. It'll probably be a different year for you.
It's gonna pain me a little bit. I'm not going
to
lie.
You had to watch every single game. Sometimes the random road games that start at like 4 o'clock, you know, all of a sudden the game is over when you're home from work, especially when the team has struggled like they have. You know, there's like those East Coast trips, there'd be like a run where like, man, I haven't feel like I've watched the Suns in like 2 weeks when you're not working for them anymore. I'm wondering if you're going to have that same struggle or if you're going to still find yourself getting to that TV and still doing what you do.
I gotta be honest, after watching almost every game for a 5-year span and having to be pretty tied in, I probably won't watch those East Coast games. Maybe I'll tune into the great Al McCoy on the way home and
Absolutely.
Catch some of it. But, you know, it's going to be weird, though. I've been at every training camp the last 5 years. I've been around the team. So it's definitely going to be a different perspective. So I don't know if I'm excited that training camp's starting, if I'm a little sad because I'm not going to be around it for the first time in a while. But I am excited that Suns basketball is back.
The Vegas over-under, they set the over-under, is 26.5 for wins this season, which is really low. Once again, we're not expecting a ton out of this team. I mean, if they make a run for the eighth seed, I think it would be a very pleasant surprise. They're young and in transition. So the question that we're posing here is, are you taking the over or the under 26.5? And if it's the over, who or what will be the reason?
See, this is tough for me because usually Vegas is fairly spot on. There's a handful of teams
they'll win
that
26.5 games, right?
Well, they're usually right within in the ballpark because they're paid to try to figure this stuff out, and the success of their business depends on being able to get people to bet on the wrong side of that line. I don't know. The one time they were totally off was 13-14, the 48-win season. Yeah. I think they had them at 19. 19.5 was probably the over-under. And I was like, you know what? I'm taking the under. I think this is a bad team. I said that to good friend John Bloom, and that's a team that won 48 wins. So take whatever I'm going to pick here with a grain of salt. I think it's probably the over. And the reason for that is you look at the depth of talent on this roster across the board, both veteran and youth, and it's tough to imagine without major injuries this team being a 25 or 26 win team again. Eric Bledsoe was playing at an all-star level last year before he got injured. He and Brandon Knight, when they were playing together, they were right around 500. Right, that's before you take into consideration. Well, Tyson Chandler was injured for a lot of that beginning of the season. Devin Booker wasn't getting any minutes at the beginning of the year. They were still screwing around with Markieff Morris and trying to figure out what, if any, role he had on this team. You remove what was a cancer in Markieff Morris out of that locker room, and just that I think is worth a few extra wins at the beginning of the season. Then you add in Eric Bledsoe's health, Brandon Knight hopefully being healthy, Devin Booker actually being a part of this, and you add in good locker room guys like Leandro Barbosa, Jared Dudley, who can have an impact on the court. And that's before we get into the youth that they add in terms of Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris and T.J. Warren coming back this year, which I think is going to have a much larger impact than anybody imagines. Now, P.J. Tucker's injured, going to be out for a few months to open the season. But I think you're looking at a bare minimum with health and without any major roster shakeup, 30-35 wins. Now, they could wind up being in that 40-40-plus win team if chemistry clicks and you get something special like we saw in 13-14. I'm not betting the house on that, but I think they're much more than a 26.5 win team, or they're better than 26.5 wins when you look at it, as long as health remains. And that's a big if, because we have seen Eric Bledsoe struggle with it. Brandon Knight numerous injury issues since he's been here, but there is too much talent on this roster if they stay healthy for them to still be in that bottom feeding kind of realm.
It's all predicated on health. Yep. You're right. And I think just the addition of Eric Bledsoe in itself gets you close to 30 wins, if not past it, into that 30-35 range as well. So I'm with you. I think I take the over, but very skeptically, because you know, this could all unravel very quickly.
Yep.
And if it unravels like it did last year, this could be fighting for 19 wins. Because if Eric Bledsoe's not there, if Tyson Chandler's not there, if they struggle with the veteran presence that they've added this offseason, then they're gonna trade away the house again. And I think if they struggle out of the gates, you're going to see Eric Bledsoe gone. I think you'll maybe see Brandon Knight gone. I think you'll for sure see Tyson Chandler gone to a contender that needs to add front court depth. And I wonder if they trade one of their young pieces like a Alex Len, TJ Warren type to try to get some value back. So if it gets off to a slow start, I think that they might jump ship early and try to get as much as they can with the young pieces like the two top 10 picks and Devin Booker. And try to really put something special together. But if they get off to a nice start and that chemistry's rolling, I mean, it's not a horrible lineup when you think if you roll out there Bledsoe, Booker, Knight, or Warren, depending on who they decide to go to at the wing position. If it's Booker at the three or Warren at three and Knight at the two. Dudley and Chandler, you know, that's a good lineup. That's not a playoff lineup. That's not a lineup that's going to win you championships, but that's a lineup that can win home games and surprise some teams that think that they could take a night off against Phoenix.
Well, and a lot of this comes down to what can Earl Watson do to foster that camaraderie and that chemistry? Because, you know, coaches can call plays, whatever. They can work on fundamentals with guys. But what it comes down to is you are a manager of personalities as a coach. You need to figure out how to build a cohesive unit, and Earl Watson has to figure out how to bring these guys together. There's a lot of great individual pieces, but they need to figure that out. And for me, this year better be as much about figuring out what you have in terms of youth and playing those guys and working with it than it is about just playing Tyson Chandler 35 minutes a game.
Yeah.
That does not help you get to any larger goal long term. The goal is build a championship contender at the time when the Warriors are starting to drop off. That should be what your time frame is. We talked about it over the summer.
We did. And one of the first episodes we had, that was one of the first things you said.
Yeah, and playing Tyson Chandler extended minutes does not help you accomplish that. Figuring out what you have in Alex Len does. Playing Jared Dudley major minutes doesn't help you figure that out. Figuring out what you have in Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, and slowly working them into the rotation, but figuring out what you have is key. Same with TJ Warren and you know, all these guys. You know, you've got to figure out what do you really have for the future, because 35 wins and beating the Vegas odds is all well and good.
It's still not making
the playoffs. But it's not making the playoffs, and if you're doing it by playing heavy minutes for these veterans, it's not accomplishing what you need for the future. I want to see this team surprise. It'd be great if they did. But really what I want is for an entertaining young product where I can go, there is a future. I understand where this team is headed, and I want to feel good about that and enjoy Suns basketball, because I haven't over the last 2 years. And most fans have not enjoyed Suns basketball because the camaraderie was gone. The winning was gone.
The exciting play was gone.
So it's at some point, there's nothing to root for there. And I think this team will give us back what we enjoy. Athleticism from Marquise Chris. A potential star in Devin Booker. Dragan Bender learning who he is in the NBA and what he'll be and growing. That backcourt that could potentially really be part of that foundation. Alex Len, who could potentially be that finally that young center that this team hasn't had since Alvin Adams. There are elements that could be exciting. I hope it gets back to that, because that's all I'm really hoping for from this Sun season is glimmers of hope and being entertaining. That's all I want.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. It's episode Luke Longley of the Dry Heat Check. So Vince Scully is in the news, and like I mentioned, he is almost at the back end of his broadcasting career, not life.
Yeah, I'm glad we clarified that, because I don't want anybody listening to this thinking
like
that
I'm a fortune teller.
We have some creepy death pool, and that Jared has decided that Scully is the next in the three to go. We're not morbid like that on the show.
No,
even though we're Arizona
not.
Sports fans, and there is a sort of a morbid element to that, we're not morbid in that way.
Absolutely not. So he's in the news because there was a dust-up skirmish. They call it a brawl in baseball.
A Donnybrook as well.
Oh, yes, yes. Between Madison Bumgarner and Yusiel Puig, between the Dodgers and the Giants. And if you watch the video or listen to it, you have basically Vin Scully reading lips for everyone saying, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me from Bumgarner. And then for Puig, what you gonna do to me? It's just hearing him say it. You have to find it and watch it yourself.
It's like one of those bad lip reading videos that go around the internet.
But with Vin Scully. Yes.
It's like your grandfather doing a bad lip reading video online. It is fantastic.
It would be funny for you to get Al McCoy to actually do a bad lip reading.
I actually got Al McCoy to do our version of it was called Twitter Peace Theater. It was kind of mean tweets. It was kind of, I got in trouble for it. Al was a great sport.
It was hilarious.
I got in trouble.
It's a shame. Anyway, so talking about Vin Scully, it brings the question up that we want to raise this week is, give me your top five movie.
Wait, well, you said top three.
Top three.
Okay. Don't add two more.
Sorry, I don't want to worry you. Top three movie play-by-play personalities. I'm going to start with one of them being Vin Scully in For the Love of the Game with Kevin Costner, where he does what he has done for years, and he narrates a story over the course of a game.
All right, I'm going to go with Ranch Wilder from Angels in the Outfield.
Great one.
Because I remember the line, less is more, less is more. And he kept turning his color guy's microphone off. And in the radio business and other media entities over the years, I've used that phrase numerous times. So Ranch Wilder, number three for me.
Bob Uecker in Major League.
God, number two, really? Your number one better be pretty.
Well, I didn't know we were doing.
Oh, I thought we were doing them in order, like most people do a top three list.
Well, then I probably would have put Vin Scully number one. Then I'm gonna go with Bob Uecker. Fine, Bob Uecker number two, playing Harry Doyle in Major League, just a bit outside, having a beer, and oh, it's just classic play-by-play acting at its finest with Bob Uecker, who is still the play-by-play voice of the Milwaukee Brewers today.
And I'll save my take on that here, but my number two has got to be the broadcast duo from Dodgeball.
F and A.
Jason Bateman as a ridiculous color commentator.
Just a bit outside.
It's so fantastic. That crew has got to be number two on
Yeah,
my
that's
list.
A very good one. Bold move, Cotton. Let's see if
Bold
it works
move,
out for
yeah,
him.
Exactly.
I guess number one, I'm going to run this guy back for the second straight week. We talked about him last week in a coaching role. Now I'm talking about him in a play-by-play role. That is John Candy, once again, as the play-by-play voice of the Chicago Cubs in the movie Rookie of the Year.
Of course you would pick Rookie. You kind of look like the kid that
Henry Rowan Gardner.
Yeah, you kind of look like
that is one
kid.
Of the best sports movies of all time.
God, how young are you again?
It's classic.
Ask anyone
who came up with me in my era, my childhood, you loved Rookie of the Year.
You probably think Sandlot is one of the greatest films
of
all time. Oh God.
Sandlot is a classic.
I am looking for a new co-host on this or any podcast.
Okay,
so
find someone who
thinks
some of those old-timing, you know, like 70s sports movies were great. You know, you could find that co-host, and I'll stick with the cool hot, 90s ones for you.
Henry Doyle and Major League is the epitome of great broadcasters in movie history.
Yes.
Those are some of the greatest lines in a comedy in movie history.
It is.
And you know what? I actually interviewed Bob Uecker about this back in my KTAR days, and he told me he ad-libbed a lot of that stuff. All right? And a lot of it was stuff that he had actually said in broadcast previously.
Really?
If you do not pick Harry Doyle as the greatest movie broadcaster of all time, you do not know movies, good sir.
Like I said, if I was thinking and picked the top three, one through three, I would have put him
All
number
right.
one.
Well, that's good, but
and then probably Vin Scully two and John Candy three. That's probably if I was on the same page with you, how I would have done it. So.
Rookie of the Year, though.
Yes.
Come on.
Oh man, you're gonna get some
Come
backlash.
On.
You
sure.
are gonna get
Tweet
some
me
backlash.
At Espo, and I'll happily argue this. That is not in the top 25 sports movies of all time, and that performance is in the top 25. I can give you plenty more, probably better 90s sports movies, let alone that. I would put in Bob Costas's performance and Al Michaels' performance in Basketball ahead of your Rookie of the Year performance. I do not know. It's just bad. Bad, man. I usually have a great deal of respect for you, but I can't respect you on that one.
All right. We'll expect some backlash here.
I'm gonna
get a few people that like that movie the way I do that are going to be, let's just say there might not be some positive comments in our comment bar on iTunes this week.
You and the Sandlot crew can come at me because I got plenty better movies. Bull Durham way high on that list, by the
way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Higher than any of those.
I would put Bull Durham right, over Rookie of the
look,
Year.
But Rookie of the Year is a classic. Sandlot? No, not
it's a classic.
Classic
not kids
classic. And then Sandlot isn't even a sports
movie. We clearly
movie.
Were kids in different eras then. You're not that much older than me, but still.
I just have better taste. We understand
well,
that. So
well, that remains
bring the comments.
Rest in
I'm
peace,
fine.
John Candy. I've got your back.
I love John Candy, the actor, but there were... That's not even a role that's on my radar of John Candy roles. You were right with Cool Runnings last week, but you're way off on this.
Is this your airing of grievance?
Oh yeah, I have
this week. As
I have a very special
are
one.
We are we are you just dogging on me for rookie
no,
of the year?
No, this
is
not.
Your airing of grievance?
I have a very special airing of grievance.
Looking forward to this because I have no idea what you're.
Are
about to
we
say.
At this point in the show?
Yes.
Can I fire
you? Have
when ready?
The floor, my friend.
If we had a producer like the great Brad Sesmatch show does, this would be where I'd ask, could we get some patriotic music, please? Because my fellow Arizonans, I'm coming to you saying it's time to make Arizona sports great again. We need to do this, and I think that my platform can actually make this happen. I want to build a wall. I'm not going to lie. I want to build a wall in the upper deck of Chase Field. We can't have a baseball stadium that seats so many people. It feels like an airplane hangar. It's not intimate. You can't play baseball in Chase Field. Build that wall in the upper deck. Build that wall up there.
Like ASU
make it,
did at make Wells Fargo Arena.
Make it 40,000 seats. Make it more intimate. Give me a better baseball venue to spend my summers in and make it feel like baseball. We need that. That's huge. We need to make Arizona sports great again. We do, Jared. It needs to happen. Maybe even make Arizona sports great for the first time. Some people say it isn't great. I tend to agree right now. It is not great. It used to be huge.
It used to be huge, Jared. It's pretty bad, minus the Cardinals. It's pretty bad.
We need to make it spectacular. You know what we need to do? Deportations. They need to happen. I'm just saying it. We need to deport every L.A. Laker and L.A. Dodger fan back to California. Get out of here.
Some of them aren't even from California.
Honestly, if you're not a fan of our hometown teams, get out. I'm done with you. We have too many bandwagon fair-weather fans in this state. We need to make Arizona sports great again, Jared. We need to do it, and we need to deport some of these people like L.A. Lakers, Dodgers, heck, the Chicago fans that are in town.
Cowboys.
We need to – Cowboys, Kansas City fans. There used to be a lot of Chiefs fans when teams were rolling. New York Giants fans. We need fans of the hometown teams. We need to make Arizona sports great again, my friend.
This is fantastic.
And we need to do it. You know what? It's time for the Suns to actually prove that they're the fourth winningest team in NBA history. I'm sick of hearing about it. I haven't seen that team in a very long time. We haven't. We need to make the Phoenix Suns great again. They need to focus on winning basketball games and figuring it out. A six-year playoff drought? Not acceptable.
Nope.
We need to make Arizona sports great again, and that starts by making the Phoenix Suns great again. We need to do it. Jared, they need to be huge again in this city. We need to make Arizona sports
Nothing's
great again. Nothing's
quite like Phoenix than the Suns during the playoffs.
We need to move the Coyotes to the East Valley.
Amen.
It needs to happen. They never should have left downtown in the first place. The fact that they play in East L.A. now is not acceptable. The only East Valley they should be playing in is in Scottsdale or Tempe, the Mesa area. Heck, downtown is even acceptable because the fan base, the hardcore fan base, hockey fan base, was in the East Valley. We need to make the Coyotes great again. And you do that by moving them to the East Valley.
Put them right next to the aquarium off Talking Stick.
I don't care where you put them. You can put them where the old drive-in theater was on McKellop, not too far from the ASU campus.
We can go to Big Surf and then throw on a jacket and catch a Coyotes game.
Freeze the Big Surf pool. I don't care what you do. Just get them into the East Valley because it's a big part of making Arizona sports great again, Jared. It has to happen. Part of the platform. If we don't do it, we're not going to be able to accomplish this. All right? You know, there's plenty more, though. I want our media voices, the big-time voices, to actually be fans of the teams here, to be born here. I'm sick of New Yorkers and Chicago guys dominating my media market. I want people that were homegrown to have a voice in this market and be some of the big-time voices. Now, that's not saying there aren't great voices in this town, like the Paula Bovins, who didn't grow up here, who weren't fans, but they do great reporting. They have great stuff. I'm not saying that there aren't some great people, but I want new blood. I want people that grew up in this town. That's how we make Arizona sports great again. People who have a shared experience with us that are telling our stories.
People always talk about how harsh Philly is because all those guys are from Philly.
I know. And you got to have that passion. We are finally at a point where we've matured enough in this market to make that happen, Jared. Another way to make Arizona sports great again, you don't get a stadium if you don't have a winning record over the last 5 years. Don't ask for my money to build your stadium. Don't come begging to me and the taxpayers to make your arena or your stadium with our money if you haven't won. I don't want to hear it. Build it yourself if you haven't won. Because, you know, the first step to making Arizona sports great again is having winning teams.
That's a very good start.
And if we hold the purse strings, you know what? Make them win. You don't get a building without winning. 5 years minimum. If you don't have a winning record in that time, sorry, you're not getting the money. When you finally get that winning record, come back. You can beg me for the money at that point. We'll give it to you. We'll make it happen. We need to make Arizona sports great again, and that's by holding them accountable to winning. It's just got to happen, Jared.
And there's more.
Hey, how about actually successful Pac-12 teams? We live in... Let's look at it. One of the greatest metropolitan areas in Phoenix, Tucson, another great area.
Great college town.
How do we not have completely dominant football teams constantly in the Pac-12? The recruiting's easy. Look at where you get to live and the kind of people you get to live around. And the fact that, hey, four major sports teams and a great atmosphere, things to do. We need Pac-12 teams that are great. ASU and U of A need to step it up. ASU and U of A, specifically on the football front, ASU on the basketball front, they need to step it up. We need to make Arizona sports great again. How about we never again accept a quarterback that doesn't have a last name that ends in ER for the Cardinals? Plummer, Warner, Palmer. If they're not as good as one of those three, say no to them. I don't want another Max Hall situation. I don't want another Stoney Case situation.
Tom Tupa.
Don't need it. Don't want it. Don't want it unless they're a punter. Make Arizona sports great again.
I never thought about that with the ER.
By only accepting quarterbacks that can actually play quarterback.
And an ER.
Let's end an ER because let's be honest. Carson Palmer's only got a few years left in the tank. We got to start thinking about the future. You got to ensure that the future is bright that way. That's the only way we make Arizona sports great again.
If your name doesn't end in ER... as a quarterback of the Cardinals, you'll end up in the ER.
Exactly.
There's my presidential contribution to this epic rant.
Look, no jerseys that don't include primary colors. I'm not talking primaries in terms of elections. We don't even need a primary in this. I'm the one candidate. I'm the way we can fix this. I'm the way we can make Arizona sports great again. And part of that is no jerseys that don't have a team's primary color. No more Pittsburgh Steelers of Arizona State University. All right? No more eclipse of the Phoenix Suns. I want jerseys that include primary colors. We need purple back in the Suns' home jersey. That's going to help us make Arizona sports great again. Maroon and gold on ASU jerseys. That's going to help us make Arizona sports great again. Let's get there. That's my platform. We need to make Arizona sports great again by doing these things, by taking it seriously, by holding people accountable. It's enough of the same old, same old. We need change. I can be that agent of change. All right? We can make Arizona sports great again.
Hashtag vote for Espo.
Jerry Colangelo, bless this great state, and Jerry Colangelo, bless all of you. I'm Espo, and I approve this message. Good day, everybody.
And I had an airing of grievances to follow that, which I'm no longer going to do because I cannot follow that. Thank you very much for bringing us your platform and your amazing research and your amazing passion. I vote for Greg Esposito to make Arizona great again.
And one last thing on my ticket. We ban Rookie of the Year from being able to be shown.
And you lost my
vote.
Good night,
everybody.
And you lost my vote. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been episode Luke Longley of the Dry Heat Check.